Any questions or anything to say?
I've been sitting with an inquiry for the whole time you've been here, and I don't know if this is the place to bring it, but it's about the premise. I say it's a premise because I'm not getting it, that I do not own the thoughts which arise within my experience. That feels like such a profound thing, and I've been thinking about it for years, and I sort of understand it on a cerebral level to some extent, but if there isn't that ownership, then what is the relationship between me and thoughts? Because there's clearly a psycho-emotional storyline that goes with the arising of thoughts, and then a momentum and a causality to thoughts.
Good. So we have to know what ownership is first. I think that you have a voice strong enough to repeat. Summarize your question, your inquiry,
okay,
in simple English.
If I'm not the ownership of thoughts which I experience, then what's my true relationship to those thoughts?
So ownership of anything? Because thoughts, it's pretty slippery. So first of all, what do we mean to by owning? What is it to own?
To possess, to own something at the exclusive nature of that they're my thoughts, they're not your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I've been sitting with the metaphor that thoughts are like nomads.
Uh-huh.
which travel through the ether.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, although there may be a crossover between my thoughts and your thoughts,
mm-hmm,
there's a continual themes which arise and develop within my thought realm, which
mm-hmm
are to some extent me specific.
Mm-hmm.
So are there like a set formula of thoughts in the universe, and then, you know,
mm-hmm,
they arise and they coalesce with my particular history,
mm-hmm,
and then I make the mistake of thinking I own them.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they're like nomads, then where do they go?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're not like nomads, where do they go? Like either way, that's another. So if I do own them, where do they go? If I don't own them, if they're nomads. Does everyone know the word nomad?
No.
So a nomad, it's not only just moving around, but yeah, maybe it's just different pronunciation. It would be like people who go in wintertime to a warmer place where there's more food, and then as it gets colder, they go to a warm place. As it gets springtime, there's good fish in the river over there, so they go over there. They go on a pretty familiar round, but they don't live in one place. And then when it's hot, they go somewhere cooler. Yes. And so the fact that they go, and ownership. So I'm not satisfied with what is owning. So it has some, there's some relationship to you. We have to think of what is I also, but there's some relationship to you, thoughts and you, there's some relationship, there's an effect, there's then cause and effect among the thoughts, and thoughts, feeling, body. You feel effects of thought. There's some relationship, but is it ownership? Like there's weather, and it has effect on you, and it has also its own causal, like there, it gets hot and then it builds up and it is likely to rain, but we're never quite sure. There's some cause and effect, it's not also completely predictable. It has effect on you. There's a relationship, but we don't assume we own the weather.
I feel with thoughts that I'm at least a co-originator or a co-motivator or a...
Are you?
Well...
So then, who is the you and how do you originate? What do you do? What's your involvement? I'm not saying you're not or just...
Yeah.
I'm not trying to dismiss by saying...
No,
you know, yeah, that neo-Advaitic dismissal I'm not trying to do.
But the Metta-Bhavya practice is the
loving-kindness practice of friendship.
Putting thought into intention,
mm-hmm,
with the assumption that it has a power, that it has,
mm-hmm,
a momentum.
Mm-hmm. So thought has a power, and leaning the thought in a direction seems to have a power. And still, I don't hear ownership. There's influence, mutual influence. But it's very, I don't know if we can we finally catch the origin of a thought. So maybe that's a good place to play with, not just assuming that I originate the thought. I can sometimes influence thoughts in a certain way. Sometimes, like Ratapal, I can say, if there's a meal, may it be given, do not harass us, to, you know, stop to sometimes. Sometimes I can say that to thoughts, if they're harassing, trying to trap. Not always. But still, that's not necessary. It could be an indication of ownership. It's not necessarily an indication of ownership. I can say to you also, stop. I can invite you. I can say no. I can say yes. And we affect each other. And I don't know necessarily the origin of you, etc. Like, I don't know if it's relevant to think of other things other than thought and relationship to that, or ownership of a thing. I don't know if that is relevant to the investigation about thought and owning thought or not owning thought, but it could be worthwhile. Probably you've done that. That could be worthwhile now. If I feel I originate the thought.
I mean, you had you've created Open Dharma.
Well, I initiated.
Okay. Yeah.
I could never have. I mean, that's clearly. Me alone is not Open Dharma.
But
it's mm-hmm, so many.
But you're afraid.
Yeah.
There's a continuous thought, a developed, evolved idea that has manifested over years to offer this for everybody to feed in and keep it vital, for example, as any visionary has with an idea that's worked.
So, but it's not an idea. So this is a great example.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew what open, I still don't know what Open Dharma will look like. And it wasn't at the beginning that I saw this,
mm-hmm,
and said, yes, okay, I sign up for that. So I think it's with ownership and initiating, that's interesting to feel. To start something, and with a sense of also a bit of leadership. Like I initiate a conversation. And I'm starting, but I bring you along, kind of. You can, no, but. So that's a good example. It's actually not at all an idea. It's partly allowing emergence and giving it a name so that it can continue to, that people, you know, that there can be a poster and there can be dates and a place and people can come. There are ideas involved, but Open Dharma itself isn't.
So would you call it an impulse? So
could be. Like, there was someone officially authorized me to teach, and me being like, yeah, right, someday, sure. And then, okay, a specific context in Sarna where that could start. And then from that, again, the next year, in a different way, and then from that, okay, yeah, we could do a retreat in India. And still there was not the name. And then there were many retreats that year, and then. And then at some point, I needed a Yahoo account. And so I was like, okay, I've got to have a name that no one's taken in Yahoo. So I tried other things. My favorite line from the Patanjali Yoga Sutra was already taken many times. Which is the reign of, it's when there's, it's towards the end, and there's like a rain cloud of dharma, dharma megha, a dark thundercloud full of moisture that is ready to rain. Dharma megha, is ready to rain dharma, so living support. That was taken many times. Dharma megha 1, dharma megha 107. So I was like, but I like this word dharma, so open dharma is not taken, so that became the name. So that's a good example of how it emerged, and I love the name. And a lot of people like the name, they'd like to have the name now. So, I wouldn't use the word impulse, but I could say, yeah, it could be, depending on what you mean by that. But it was like partly invitation that I said, okay, let's see, okay, yeah. And then I also added to that my own, well, this has been helpful for me, so what if we do that plus this? And then that plus this gets a little full, so what if we drop that and keep this? And people saying, I really like the da-da-da-da-da, so okay, we'll keep doing that. So ideas involved, but it does seem that there is something that does emerge, that does make sense afterwards, looking back. And I think it's also like crucially important for Open Dharma, as well as for life, that there could stay that openness, that there could stay that, like, I know that I don't know. And there's a heightened sensitivity of knowing how important, helpful, and transformative this can be. Feeling for stuckness, feeling for need, feeling for a greater potential that could offer something that wasn't possible before, because now it's grown, it's evolved to here. So like a feeling process that is responsive, that works with what's possible and available, what someone happens to say.
That's the creative process.
Yeah. So about thought itself, it sounds also like, what is a place for thought, where the way that it influences would be enriching, would be nourishing, would be supportive.
Because if we're not partly, if you do away with ownership and I'm not even sure if I'm a co-originator of thoughts, then I can be quite reckless with my thoughts. Where's the responsibility with thought, and
that in the sensitivity of that there is a, there are effects. So just because I may not own it, we're still, I don't know what it means yet to own something, anything. But like, as Elka was saying, it's a creative process that we're involved, like we can influence, we can be involved in the thinking life, how it goes, and helping find a place for that. So, and then that playing with, is it possible to catch how it starts, where it comes from, or where it goes? And I think it's important, like really sticking to the, our direct experience as usual. Because we could imagine all kinds. What if we're all thinking the same thing at the same time? We just don't know it. Could be. It would be hard to keep track of that. But we don't know. So let's not go there. I think I saw two. I saw that one, and I just thought I saw another one.
I just wanted to say, this question, I've played with it quite, I've played with it a lot, and what I find the most exciting or alive place in it is being willing to fully embrace body, mind, thoughts, everything that comes with it, and sort of, and then also at the same time being willing to fully embrace the emptiness, or and it feels like when I don't hang my hat in either one or the other, you know, as it all forms into the when I don't hang my hat, I feel this incredible freedom. I feel this real. I think of it, and I feel freedom because I don't have to be this or that. As in. Fully human, really explore that and really go into it and be fully not here.
Thank you.
Even though I'm not wearing a hat.
I was thinking of speaking of creativity. Anyway, so partly I wanted to come back to the two Zen guys who were both seems like Buddhas according to the story. One a teacher, one an attendant, and maybe we can call this talk Attending the Garden. We started to talk a bit last time about this. And there's the question of what are miracles, and I think, in a way, a thought that comes, and it's hard to catch where, even though so much of our life is involved in thinking. And then creativity also. And we have the attendant staying politely, and we have the attendant leaving. And Dogen comments on the story. In this story, words are heard and the meaning of miracles is understood. So we can say, maybe it's understood without our realizing. Another kind of understanding. So there's already a miracle of words being heard and the meaning of miracles being understood. So not just words and not just miracles or insight or whatever, but together. And we have a teacher and a student together. There is merging like box and cover joining. You should know that it is a miracle to have a disciple like Dongshan who does not veer off, does not get off track. I've mentioned this before, I'm just reading it again. Or to have a high ancestor like Yun Yan who does not come forward. And then he gets loopy, but I just wanted to share a little bit of the loopy kind of weird. On the road of Buddhas, there are also great miracles that happen at the top or bottom of the body. The entire world of 10 directions is the true body of a single meditator. And he gets more and more like, I'll give you a taste because it's just funny. It's so different from our what we would usually find ourselves saying or hearing. So he talks about the mountains and the oceans. Also the oceans of thusness, so it is as it is-ness, the ocean of is it is as it is-ness, the ocean of wisdom, are no other than water spouting from the top, bottom, and center of the body. So, and he gets more and more weird. Things spouting from the top and bottom of the body. But also the basic idea is, this is Enlightenment Unfolds, Dogen commenting on a Zen story, the Zen story koan. So just these questions that we have too of when I think about thinking or I try to feel into thinking or I try to experiment and find out about thinking. And it seems like the thinking that I have to work with is within me. But we're not sure. And so just having these kind of little bit crazy statements of the body of a meditator, of a single meditator, is the whole world, including the oceans of realization, the ocean of wisdom, the ocean of is it is as it is, thusness. And it's just doing its thing, spouting from the top and the bottom of the body. It has its own. I didn't ever read the end of the poem about the song, the holy love that flows through earthly forms and folds, the song of heaven's Sabbath, fleshed and throat and ear and stream and stone, a grace living here as we live, then asking that. Move my mind now to that which holds things as they change. The warmth has come, the doors have opened. Flower and song, embroider ground and air. Lead me beside the healing field that waits. Growth, death, and a restoring form of human use will make it well. So we'll do our work when it's time, and it's doing its work. But I go on beyond, higher in the hill's fold. Forget the time I come from and go to. Recall this grove left out of all account, a place enclosed in song. Design now falls from thought. I go amazed into the maze of a design that mind can follow but not know. So we talked about open dharma, and what is it? Apparent, plain, and yet unknown, the outline lost in earth and sky. So with the example of what has so far been open dharma, I keep having this image of standing at the back of a boat and looking where the boat has been. We can see. The boat has been here. There's the way that the water has the wake, the V of waves that go out. So the mind can follow, but not know. We don't know where we're going when there's creativity happening aloud. And as it emerges, it's apparent, plain, and yet unknown. It can be quite simple. This is what needs to be done now. it might be hard, it might be easy, it might be, but it can be quite simple, like, okay. But without a like grandiose sense of a vision, I'm fulfilling my vision. Just the simple in that doing what needs to be done now that comes out of nowhere. Apparent, plain, and yet unknown. The outline lost in earth and sky. So as Jane was saying, that sense of there are things that happen, there are thoughts, there are emotions, and I can allow that. And there's also where there isn't a thing, and I can allow that. Not even keeping track of there being two places for a hat, just lost in earth and sky. The outline of what I'm doing. I'm not keeping track of an outline of what I'm doing. It's free to emerge. And what in the moment is simple, plain, apparent, plain, and yet unknown. So I waited to read what I still haven't read, the last part of the poem, because it's basically he's using the image of Jesus now. What form wakens and rumples this? So rumple, I said, is like when you wake up and the sheets are messy. So Jesus was wrapped in cloth and put, after his death, into a cave with a big rock in front of the opening of the cave. So after being lost, what wakens and rumples this? What leaves the cloths there all messy, not wrapped around a person anymore? Be still. A man who seems to be a gardener rises out of the ground. Stands like a tree, shakes off the dark, the bluebells opening at his feet, the light one figured cloth of song. So someone came to check on the body of Jesus and saw someone walking around, and I think was even a bit suspicious, who is this walking around here, around my teacher's dead body, and thought, oh, it's the gardener. And it was Jesus. Having risen, or whatever way it was.
Can you read this?
Yeah. There's a lovely line of Krishnamurti, J. Krishnamurti, an Indian teacher, elegant gentleman, who's no longer living, about beauty. Beauty is where you, in quotation marks, are not. And in the poem, where design now falls from thought, that would be where there's more room for beauty. Design now falls from thought. I go amazed into the maze of a design that mind can follow but not know. Apparent, plain, and yet unknown, the outline lost in earth and sky. So there's a kind of death. There's a kind of losing track of the storyline, etc. So sometimes with the body experience, there could be a feeling of the body freed of our memory of the body. The body experience being freed of the memory. Sometimes we're relating so much to the memory of the body, where something in the mind carries, or in the psyche carries, the image memory of the body, and we're with that. And we're less with what's actually happening. And when we're with anything, earth or sky, spiritual or physical, emptiness or form, if we go into any of it fully, we allow it fully, then there's that sense of outline lost in earth and sky. It's truly not different. And then he's like, it's interesting because Wendell Berry, this poet, seems to be deliberately mixing in Buddhist language with the Christian image. What form wakens and ruffles this? Form is a Buddhist word, not a Christian one, in my experience. What form wakens and ruffles this? Be still. So then the ordinariness of creativity, of where does thought come from? And is there a way to let it come from somewhere deep whether I own it or not. Is there a way of, like, I had a feeling a bit with when we were speaking, Hetty, of maybe it's like when you spoke of loving kindness practice, metta bhavana, the way that we can practice with the mind through words and images and textures in the body and patience and dedication and uncovering a natural ability to of friendliness, that there's the divine abiding, there's a resting place that is not of this world, so to speak, that is limitless, it goes on forever, that we can rest in. Those are called the divine abidings, including friendship, friendliness, love. We can practice that. Is that maybe like that we take care with where the spring comes out of the ground and we help it be clean and come out in an appropriate place? Is it that there's a spring that we can, we don't own the water, we need the water, there's enough water, and is there a way that we can help the water be drinkable? Something like we can maybe work with the opening that the water could come out of. It was just an image that came as we spoke. So when the outline is lost in earth and sky, it's not a vision I'm trying to achieve, but something is allowed to emerge. What form awakens and rumples this? So that was our question. Is it an impulse? It's not an idea. Ideas are not excluded, they're part of the process. But what's happening is not fundamentally an idea. What form, what is that, that wakens and rumples this? And does the impossible, so Dogen's using this word miracle, could be called creativity. It could be finding a way that the water comes clean. So while something is wakening and rumpling. So rumpling this, he doesn't say what this is. But there, what there was before was a design. So there was an experience of beauty. Beauty where you are not. What form wakens and rumples this? And then I like the ambiguity. So there's different ways of understanding the line. What form wakens and rumples this? Maybe the form is waking up and then rumpling, messing up. Or is the form waking this? Is it like a continual further awakening of what was already an amazing, amazing design that thought could follow but not know? And when there's wakening and rumpling, be still. Someone who seems to be a gardener, so someone who seems uninteresting, if anything, a bother, maybe suspicious. No one special, certainly. Someone who does work. A gardener rises out of the ground, stands like a tree, shakes off the dark. The bluebells, which is a kind of flower, the color of the sky, opening at his feet. The light one-figured cloth of song. A little bit of accepting the impossible of we are and we are not. There's influence, but is there ownership? There are thoughts, but where do they come from? What are they made of? Where do they go? Do they go? Are they mine? What is a good use of thought? Is it proper to use things, whether we own them or not? Or is it proper to let them tell what their place is? So it's a little bit like how big is our garden? If my body is said to be the universe, and not only the physical universe, but also the ocean of suchness, it's or thusness, here it's translated. thus it is thus. It is as it is. It's impossible to describe, at least. And the ocean of wisdom is the body of a single person meditating. And from all of that rises, stands, and walks a gardener. So it's just curious. Sometimes we think I'm investigating my thoughts, and we can't be sure if they're my thoughts. Can we? Sometimes we're investigating how things are going in the world, and it's hard to know if we're really investigating the world. Or I was talking with someone today about when there would come an urgent sense of a need to do something because there's such terrible things happening. And then is that in contradiction with going inside and meditating? But maybe, first of all, if we can feel if I'm in touch with the world, or am I in touch with this pain? Does that remind me of this? Does that wake this up, this pain? And then could we just accept, as Jane was saying, give room to that and just find out, what do you need? You're hurting. It's urgent. And kind of a bit like, I'm here. If it hurts, a way of like, I can be here. If there's anything you need, I'm here. And then do we know for sure that that gesture of attending to, listening to that heart, are we sure that that has no effect? Other than for oneself. Maybe just not to be so sure, so soon. I think it's easier to feel when we are involved in an outer work that we feel good about doing, how that does stuff in us. So that could just leave some room for maybe when we're involved in a way that feels good inside, we don't know what else is, what other effects there are, seemingly outside. And we leave a little bit of room and the whole thing unravels. Comes apart. That last kind of weird line of the poem, the Jesus poem, I can say. The light one figured cloth of song. What does that mean? The light one figured cloth of song. Cloth. This is cloth. Fabric. Mm-hmm. So he's left the cloth that was wrapped around the dead body. So, but maybe he's not naked. Maybe he's clothed in the light of song. But it's not. It doesn't say that. Just straight.
He says the light one. What is the one you referred to there?
It's probably him. The light one.
Oh, Jesus.
Probably. Mm-hmm. But the word figured in there, which is the figured is a more of a, from the Christian side, I would say. And then, of course, as always with Wendell Berry, his whole nature is his main practice, spiritually, of song, where we started the whole poem is that the song as if opens the doors and warms up the whole world and leads him by the field to the grove. And, His own students didn't recognize him, though. They thought he was the gardener. Well, Mary Magdalene recognized him, but some of the students didn't recognize him. It was just the gardener. So he may have been shining, or... What I sense, without wanting to be sure at all, because I think it's got many meanings, is a further, even more expansive experience of beauty, of that. So that design falls from thought, mind can follow, and I would say even appreciate, but not know. And then we've lost the outline. We've lost the border. It gives the feeling of not only the border of myself, but the border between heaven and earth, that those borders are lost, at least to our perception. And that from there, it's like another dropping, perhaps, into a further beauty, a further delicate design or unfolding. Is there anything? This was all the introduction to the actual talk. We have tomorrow. Unfolding. I'm unfolding the paper, which in this case has two folds. It actually has more than that in this case to fit in the what it gives the feeling is not having to create, not having to come up with our enlightenment, but that somehow we're born with, so this, it comes with a human being. Something that in the right conditions can open. So another way is the blossoming. It can open.
So like, what do you think like happened in the way? Like what happened, like if we are born with this, experience,
mm-hmm.
enlightenment, and then try to attain.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Okay. So I'll just dip a little bit into the actual, what I thought was going to be the talk today, which was, with gardening, there's the aspect of beauty and the beautiful experience of eating that nourishment that, wow, does itself with our help and the hard work. And I wanted to just get to be clear about what kinds of hard work come along, because we could easily be like, yeah, hard work as an ego trip, as further blinding and wasting our lives and being busy with something that's not important just to be busy. So what is the hard work, or what is the work? What are some of the kinds of work that come along? And one of them that I noted down, not to say that I have a complete list necessarily, but one of them that I noted down was going in is work, is a work that we, so it's a practice that it needs to be practiced. It needs to be put into practice, going in. So not only because of we feel easily an insecurity, and then we move from there. And so then we easily want to have something to hold onto, to reassure us, to make me be sure that I'm doing the right thing or whatever, getting somewhere, whatever the psychology is. And so there is going against that very strong habit energy, and also not only habit energy, so it's a lot of stream that we would go against, a lot of current that we would go against. Finding a more subtle current that that does go upstream, that exactly finds the stream and goes upstream. Like the trout fish that knows without knowing, never been there, but it goes back to where its parents created it, so to speak. There's also, we could say, how to put it? It's very natural that we would be on alert and therefore focused outward, because there are snakes and there are scorpions, for example. Just forget about the way we feel threatened by people, but also just naturally, some part of us is sort of, we can say, at the ready to take care. And so there's also this very natural, a nature outgoingness, a nature-based focus outside. And we also find ways of finding that stream and going up that stream against the current, so we go in. And it's natural that we hear something and then the thought could come, us, is that a snake, for example. It's also another kind of natural to find, you know, we don't have to make up with all our personal willpower strength going against that stream, going against biology or something like that. That we would never get enough leverage, we would never get in the ways we think of trying hard, we wouldn't manage for more than 5 minutes. It's almost the opposite. By sort of giving up those ways of trying to exclude, so I'm trying to get rid of going out, is how we would usually think of it. I've got to get rid of this going out thing so that I can go in, so that I'm doing the right thing. And when we try that way, where it's inherently like there's no way out of that being a conflict, friction, and therefore it's going to be tiring after some time. Giving up that kind of conflict. So Krishnamurti talks about, what about the possibility of living without any sort of control? And then he says immediately, not indulging thoughts. Not indulging any thought. And living without any control, without a single control. So it's partly that we feel when we do it through control, there's the friction, there's the, it's not a smooth ride. It's hard. It's hard work in that way. That's easy to feel how hard it is. It's an outer kind of hard, and there will be an attraction to that kind of hard. It can make, gives us the feedback that we're doing something hard, which could be, I feel good about. The kind of dharma hard we're not so attracted to. We give up so easily. We think it's too hard for me. It is too hard for me. Some other things have to, other resources have to come into play, but they need some space that they can come through, that they can come into play. So something's waking and rumpling, be still. Not giving up, not running away. And something's rising out of the ground. It has a different kind of form, it's dressed in a different kind of cloth. The blue bells spring up. So this certain kind of flower that is shaped like a bell and is blue, the feeling of sky coming out of the earth with song, that, which is the theme of the poem. But in this case, in response to the footstep, no longer calling Wendelberry to the grove, but now in response to the footstep, that embodied holy song is coming out of the ground, and it's beautiful. Okay. Anything left? Is that a comment or question?
I'm just thinking,
Shouldn't it be maybe just so simple that we don't even know? I mean,
yes.
So simple when I sometimes look at people in the fields
yeah.
or
mm-hmm.
working people that I think, wow.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly.
So
not only Wendell Berry agrees with you. When he says that line, simple, unadorned, simple apparent, and yet unknown. And the spiritual traditions have their ways of saying what you're saying. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your practice. Your dedication and your courage, honesty, and your happiness. May our practice and our lives be dedicated to the fruitfulness of human being everywhere. In all times and places, including in ourselves here and now.